Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. Tell me this, Allison, what is your favorite high-tech gadget in the house?
Well, I don't know how high-tech it is, but I believe early in the morning, my favorite gadget in the house is definitely the orange espresso machine that we have.
Orange espresso? Like it makes espresso out of oranges?
No, it's orange colored, and I think it's fancy, and I've finally mastered it.
Oh, the machine's orange.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The espresso is
not
orange.
A lot more sense.
The espresso is kind of a brownish color with like a nice little lighter brown foam on top. And then you can't even see the brown color because then it's covered by this nice steamed milk that I do with a little cinnamon on top. It's delicious.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, my favorite high-tech gadget is probably the Xbox 360.
Of course it is.
Because it has games and stuff on it.
And because you mention it on every podcast.
Not every podcast.
A lot of podcasts.
A few. It's been, just been really good of late because of that darn Western game. But anyway, my point being, as high-tech as these gadgets are, the electric grid that fuels them with their energy is not necessarily all that high-tech.
But it is a crazy, large, complicated machine, perhaps the world's largest machine.
Yeah.
I've heard that touted.
And it's a lot of it's depending on like 100-year-old infrastructure, some 50-year-old assets. It's like this weird mix of just really outdated stuff and just cutting edge, technology. And it's to the point where it's not really that efficient or not nearly as efficient as we need it to be.
Yeah, and as it could be. And so that's why we're talking today about the smart grid.
Right. The smart, and this term's gets thrown around a lot, and it is complicated. Like, you can't just go to nobody can realistically say, hey, when are we getting smart grid around here? Or, go to the store and buy me some smart grid. it's a little more complicated than that. Like, the analogy that keeps coming to my mind is, like, think of the internet, right?
Okay, right.
It encompasses data, hardware, software, users, massive companies, distributors. It's a system, right? All right. Power is much the same way. All right. The grid is the manner by which power is produced, delivered, consumed, and accounted for.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
And if you follow this, it's like this chain. All right. On one end, we have generation of power,
mm-hmm.
power plants, etc. And on the far end, we have
us sucking up the power.
Right. We have Xbox 360s and orange espresso machines.
Right.
And then we have several different links in between. These links are, all right, again, generation's the first one, then transmission. Then you have your substation, and this is where voltage is transformed from high to low, or the reverse, using transformers.
Yeah.
Not the robots in disguise, but, you know, transformers, electrical transformers.
And then you have a distribution point, right?
Right, distribution. And then you have your home.
Yeah, that last mile and the home and us.
Right. So the smart grid in concept is about making each link in this chain more efficient on an individual level and increasing communication across the grid to make it all smarter.
Right.
All right. Smarter systems and enabling smarter users.
Right. Because you can have the smartest system in the world, but of course we need to know how to use it in the best way possible, the most efficient way possible.
Right. And that's why it's so complicated. We're talking about upgrading in a huge system. You know, the largest machine in the world.
Right. And why should you care about this? Because it ultimately breaks down to lower energy bills, of course,
mm-hmm.
A better carbon footprint, and smarter, more informed energy usage.
Yeah. And if you want to get off fossil fuels, you know, whether you're talking about political reasons or environmental reasons.
Or cost reasons.
Yeah, et cetera. Then this, in many people's eyes, is the bridge to from an oil-based world to a purely electrical world.
Right. So let's get smart in our house.
Yeah, around the house, there are a number of things that make up a, you know, smart grid just around the house. And
we got some pretty basic ones like motion detectors.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Like, I'm not in the study and I don't want the lights on in the study, you have it set up to motion detectors, you know?
You know, this whole discussion on smart grid technology did lead me to wonder whether someday we could get to motion detected air conditioning.
I don't know. Sounds like an awesome idea. Another big one, and we go into this in our How Stuff Works article about vampire power,
an article which you wrote.
Yes, I did. I had to fight to get it called vampire power, though.
You did? Yeah. What was the alternative?
They wanted to use phantom load, which is another term for it.
Power is so much sexier.
Yeah, my wife thinks that phantom load sounds like if you go to, like, change a baby's diaper and it's empty.
No.
Then it's phantom load.
That's pretty funny.
But you have these smart power strips. For instance, there's a you can get master slave strips. All right.
Which sounds intriguing.
Yeah. It's, basically the idea is you have like one dedicated like master plug
mm-hmm.
on this power strip.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have slave plugins. The idea being like take your entertainment system.
Right.
You have like your video game console, you have your DVD player, your sound system, you know, whatever. You have several different machines there, and they all depend on the TV. Like,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be using your Xbox without the TV on. So you plug the TV into the master slot, and then everything else goes into the slave slots.
Gotcha.
So unless the master device is on, there's not going to be any power available to the slave slots. And
okay.
The whole reason is that vampire power is the amount of energy that those different machines drain even if they're off.
Right.
Yeah.
But plugged in.
Yeah, like that little red dot blinking at you on your device even though it's off, vampire power.
And then you have stuff like Energy Star appliances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, the washer dryer, the front loader, that's good stuff. I mean, but the Energy Star covers lots of appliances. And then smart meters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we should also mention common sense too. You know, I mean, it's like, do I have two refrigerators when I only need one? You know, just kind of common sense, things like that.
So I have to mention, sorry, Mom and Dad, that my parents are really big into having two refrigerators, and there are two people. And so we went, and I was a little surprised. And they're like, oh, well, we just turned on the second fridge out in the garage. And it was really nice. I mean, there are, you know, Cokes and various other beverages that mm-hmm. I like to consume in the fridge. But I was like, why do they have two refrigerators running? Why don't they just stick the extra beverages on the pantry floor or something like that? It was kind of an odd system.
Well, you never know when you're going to want to sit down and drink 24 Coca-Colas in fast succession, you know.
I think there is also some Corona Light in there. But in their defense, my husband very, 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 very much wants to get a deep freeze.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. A lot of people are on this two-fridge kick.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, so common sense. Maybe don't have that second fridge if you want to get down with the smart grid technology.
But like I said, the other big one is the smart meter. And
yeah.
This is the one that gets a lot more play of late.
This sounds really cool.
Yeah, smart meters are just basically physical meters, you know, like on the wall in your house, that allow for two-way communication between you, your home, and the wide area network. All right. So how much power are you using? How much is available? You know, what the rate is. It's like, you know, the utility company is able to see how much power is required on the local level. And you're able to see, like, how much am I using right now? Ideally, you'd be able to look at a smart meter and see, like, what's your power usage now, versus what it was exactly 1 week ago.
Right. You know? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Because that's one of the big things. It's like being able to tell, you know, what you're using, you know, and changing it, you know.
Right. And modify behavior. Mm-hmm. Or not modify behavior, depending on you know, what your power usage is showing. So are these things out?
Yeah, they've been using them in different locations. And actually, they've been available, like, for commercial buildings in various stages for a while. Like, for instance, I recently toured the Woodruff Art Center here mm-hmm. in Atlanta for an article about their various green innovations, including a green roof. And they have this really cool display out front, like on a touch screen, where like visitors, and this is also available online, where you can actually see their real time energy usage. All right, so that's that kind of thing has been around for a little while, and an example of people rolling it out on a more local level.
They have these things in California and in Texas, right?
Uh huh. 6,000 apartments in Oklahoma City were given smart meters and smart thermostats. And it gave tenants, you know, an idea of how much power they're consuming and how they were spending. And apparently that went really well. So.
Another big thing that smart meters could enable is something called time of use pricing.
Yeah, this is pretty cool.
Right. So think about your electricity bill and however much it runs, and it's just this lump sum, right? Mm-hmm. But think about whether that energy bill, that electricity bill, was broken out according to different rates of the day. So when there's a huge demand for energy in the middle of the day, when everybody's at work and using their laptops or doing whatever it is they're doing, maybe you have a higher price. And then at night, when it's cooler and energy demand has dropped off a little, then your rate might be lower.
Right. And to a certain degree, it could almost be like playing the stock market. You know, it's like, what's the energy price right now?
Yeah.
You know, should I watch all my children? You know, or should I just go play with my actual children in the yard or something? You know, because of the cost of electricity.
Right. So it could redefine how and when energy is consumed.
I talked to a member of Green Tech Media recently,
okay.
David Leeds, author of The Smart Grid in 2010, which uh-huh. is a fabulous free online source. If you're out there and you're thinking, I really would like 136 pages of really good info about smart grid and where it stands
right now. Yeah, forget that 20 minutes Robert and Allison are giving me. I want the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah, well, we're aimed at totally different audiences here. But yeah, if this isn't
Indeed.
Enough and you want some really hardcore data, I highly recommend Green Tech Media for that. But anyway, I was talking to him and he pointed out that one of the crucial things, the stumbling block to some of this technology, is we need regulatory reform to encourage consumer involvement in smart grid by eliminating single fixed retail rate for most electrical consumption. All right.
So what's the problem with this?
Well, that's because you're just paying a flat fee. You know, it wouldn't be an issue of like what's electricity priced right now. That, you know, we would want to bring in time of use rates. All right, implemented in your smart meter on your home energy management system.
Right, so your gut instinct is, oh no, my electricity bill is going to be higher, right? I mean, that would be mine.
Well, that's one of the ongoing sort of concerns, and that has to do with actually implementing the, you know, a lot of the smart grid technologies. You have to do it in a way so that you don't just, you know, spike the cost of electricity. But that's kind of a whole another issue that people are dealing with.
Right, and then businesses, you have to wonder how this would affect them. Would they be psyched about point of use? I'm sorry, time of use pricing or not? I mean, would they have room to maneuver? Would they have room to really change their behavior? I mean, would it be something like, well, gee, you know, we're using a lot of energy and there's a real heat wave coming through and, you know, maybe we should implement a teleworking policy.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's getting, like due to the heat and the cost of electricity, it's like more expensive to keep the office staffed, you know, in certain hours of the day. So yeah, maybe that solution is letting them work at home. Maybe the solution is
having a siesta, letting us all go home after lunch.
Yeah.
Come back around twilight when it's cooled off a little bit.
Or shorts all the time.
We already have Shorts Friday. You do know that, right?
I don't.
Are you going to bust out the shorts Friday? Come on.
I don't really wear shorts. Not, unless I'm at the beach. You know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, there are a number of different things I think that, you know, a company could do. And that's the thing. They would have the freedom to sort of play with it. And who knows, if we got to the point where we had, you know, the time of use pricing available, maybe flat fee stuff would still be available for people who could, you know, do that. You know, it's kind of like, are you paying by the download for something, or are you paying like a flat fee for unlimited downloads kind of a deal? I don't know. You know, I'm just speculating on different ways that.
Well, gas companies offer floating rates, I think. Mm-hmm. As opposed to fixed price plans. Like, you can lock in your price for, you know, a period of 12 months. But so maybe they could do something similar. I have to wonder how the power companies feel about this, because if we're all getting smarter mm-hmm. about the way we're using power, then doesn't that mean we're using less? And doesn't that mean that they're, you know, not going to get as much money from us?
Yeah, I think in places that's kind of a concern. I think the example that that Leeds used was it's kind of like convincing Starbucks to make it their business to sell less coffee to the consumer. So that's certainly on people's radar. Oh, and another thing that that smart meters would allow is this thing called demand response, okay. Which is a pretty cool idea. And this is where utilities would give an incentive to customers to reduce their consumption at critical peak times. All right. So it's like, we're talking about like an hour, you know, during a summer day when it's like where electricity is just really being pumped, right? So certain people will have like pre-agreed on their contract that if they cut down their usage during those hours, they'll get an incentive check. So, you know.
So that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So moving out of the home for a little bit, we're going to come back around to the home in the end, but you move back up the chain and you hit the distribution section. All right. And we're gonna breeze through some of these middle areas a little faster. But like with the distribution, it's like
how's this tying into smart grids?
Right, and it's like the smart grid stuff in your house. It kind of like flows back up the channel. Mm-hmm. Like the more you know about what's being done on the consumer end, the smarter each link in the chain going all the way back to production can be.
Right. So you were talking about giving incentives to customers to not suck up power at peak demands. Well, how is that going to help a distribution point? Because maybe they will not have as many outages going on.
Yeah. It's kind of like we kept talking about hamburgers when we were going over this before. Because it's like...
Maybe because it was lunchtime.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, it's like imagine you have a table and they're being sent four hamburgers, mm-hmm. whether they're going to eat it, you know. Is a different issue, but they're being sent four hamburgers, but maybe they only need three. Smart grid is like knowing that they only need three hamburgers at this time, so you don't send five.
Right. Yeah, we're getting smarter about our hamburgers and our power usage.
More hamburger analogies to come. So, yeah, the distribution area involves that. Also involves something called phasor management units, which is just allows us to keep more precise tabs on electrical usage in the smart grid and take a lot of the guesswork again out of supplying it.
All right, so let's move on up to the substation.
Yeah. This, again, is where transformers convert high to low voltage or the reverse. And an example of a smart grid optimization at this point would be monitoring and correcting the voltage in the transformers. All right? We're talking basically real-time ability to monitor and tweak millions of transformers and reduce wasted power and improve efficiency. So, again, it's the smart meter in the home, like all that information, like going back up the chain.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The system would detect a higher low voltage level reading that's exceeding the normal threshold, and it could automatically send this corrective action to adjust the voltage back to normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently in a lot of cases, you'd have people who would, in the past, it would be underjuiced, you know, they wouldn't be getting enough power, but more often than not, overjuiced. So
I think you're overjuiced on a regular basis, dude.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of free coffee around here. But anyway, yeah, it's like, but down to the hamburgers again. It's like preventing a situation where we're sending five hamburgers to a table that only needs three.
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting, and I'm glad you brought it up, because historically, the utility companies have had little control beyond the substation, and that's mm-hmm. where we're at right now in the chain talking about. So North American utilities, being highly risk-averse, have never really wanted to admit to problems of low voltage and supplying low voltage to customers that can regularly occur. And so the challenge of optimizing the energy going to this huge network from the substation meant that yeah, some consumers are going to have to live with this low subpar voltage.
Yeah. All right. Now we're going to roll up another link on the chain back towards power generation, this time transmission.
Right.
And we're not going to spend much time on this one either. This one is basically we can start using superconducting cables to reduce line loss. So less electricity is lost in transit on the lines. And you're carrying 3 to 5 times more power.
Yeah, that sounds pretty smart to me.
And so now we roll back one more, and now we're at the generation level.
Yeah, the point of generation, whether it's the coal plants or the nuclear power plants or whatever we're talking about. And sadly, we still are talking a lot about coal and more and more, though, natural gas.
Right. Now, and even if alternative energy like wasn't in the picture, at the very least, it would be a situation where we wouldn't be rolling out more and more like coal power plants, more and more natural gas to solve a problem, you know. By making everything on the rest of the chain smarter, we're not having to just create extra energy to account for shortfalls.
Right. I sort of think of it, here in Atlanta, we like to build highways, right?
Yes.
And instead of building, say a train system or more efficient highways, usually we just add a lane to the highway.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect picture to paint. Yeah. It's like instead of adding just more and more lanes till you have this just ridiculous, ungodly, thick road that just scares my mother to death. You would actually, you know, it's like actually let's streamline the system. Let's make the system smarter, not, just more out of control and just, you know, increase the base.
Right.
The integration of, renewables and alternative energy sources is a part of the smart grid. And part of the plans for a smart grid future. One of the problems, though, is you can't necessarily count on some of these renewable energies as well. Like take wind energy.
Right. So you mentioned the Great Texas Wind Out of 2008, where wind energy dropped substantially in just 3 hours, and the amount that was lost was comparable to basically losing a large size conventional power plant. And the system operators that were unfortunately working that day, they had to resort to emergency demand response, which meant they were curtailing power to interruptible customers in order to avoid a blackout.
Yeah, and it's the weather. Yes, and the weather is basically not a predictable thing. I mean, we can forecast it to a limited degree within a very limited time frame, and you can't really book for energy as much on it. So that's just the reality of that. Now, this is where a storage issue comes into play. Like one of the big things about electricity is that for the most part, we have to use it as soon as we make it. To go back to the hamburgers, it's like imagine if there was no freezer in the back with extra hamburgers. All the hamburgers are on the grill.
Right.
You know, and we're cooking them and we're just going to have to eat them. And if we don't use them, we're going to waste them. And, you know, it's that kind of situation. And sadly, the storage storage technology is developing. We have some very good storage going on in places, but not to the point where we can, say like, oh, summer's coming up. We need to store a whole bunch of power away to deal with, those guys running AC out in California.
Right. But to your point, batteries do back up the guts of the grid. You'd mentioned in Charleston, West Virginia, there's a substation that, unfortunately, used to overheat every time too many customers drew current through it. Mm-hmm. So then what did American Electric Power do? They installed a battery to supply electricity on peak demand days, and the substation stopped overheating. Similarly, up in Alaska, they used to suffer outages with every glitch on the power line between Anchorage and Fairbanks. So they installed a soccer field-sized battery to cover the line during failure.
Soccer field-sized battery.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is a giant, giant battery.
And I think that kind of like gives you an idea of what we're dealing with here. It's like we just can't put soccer field-sized batteries everywhere, you know?
I think my historic district people would highly object to that.
Not like that. It comes back to the story we were talking about earlier with the grasshopper and the ant.
Yeah.
Do I have this right? The grasshopper would just eat and eat and eat, and then the ant would store away for winter, and then winter comes, and then the grasshopper is like, whoa, I don't have anything to eat. And the ant.
Silly grasshopper.
Yeah, and the ant's like, silly grasshopper, I got food back here. So we want to be like the ant in terms of our electricity usage, but we're really more like the grasshopper at this point. We're somewhere in between, working towards antdom.
Yeah, we're becoming smarter grasshoppers. And I think we're working toward the ultimate goal,
Yeah, the ultimate goal is the smart grid. We're talking about just, like I say, making the chain between generation and usage smarter. Another, and this is where we tie back around to the user, is this idea of distributed generation and storage.
Yeah.
And this is where, at the user end of the chain, it's in a way,
this is you.
This is you. Like a rough example would be like, all right, you know, it's going to get hot. You might have some shortfalls getting some electricity during certain times of the year. So maybe you have a lot of wind and you have a couple of wind turbine things put up, right?
Right. Slap a couple of solar panels, which you can rent now, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solar panels or, you know, you're some sort of battery system, et cetera, where you're generating or storing power on the user end to sort of help out the supply coming in from the rest of the chain.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So if you guys are using smart meters or have any experience with smart grid technology, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. You know, regardless of if you're a part of like some sort of a test case in a particular city, or if you're just doing a lot of stuff on your own end to just, you know, sort of force the smart grid at the local level, tell us about that. We'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com. And meanwhile, we'll be chatting up smart grids on Facebook and Twitter, too. We're on Facebook, you can find us at Stuff from the Science Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter, we are Lab Stuff. RL is the master of tweeting, so be sure to tune in and check out his tweets.
So thanks for listening. Tune back in next week, and we'll have two more exciting podcasts about something from the wide world of science.
Yeah, and thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shankar, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything, that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these moments. Their stories are full of candor and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.